Well, who was here last week? Quick show of hands. A reasonable number of you, not everyone. In last week we were in John chapter 9. Chris was talking to you from that. Really, really important that you've got that fresh in your minds as we come into the story of John chapter 10. So we're going to review that a little bit. We're not going to go over all the ground that Chris went through last week. But just to refresh your memories, let's start off in the first verses of John chapter 9. And Jesus, as he went along, saw a man blind from birth. A guy who's had a hard life. The setup then was different to the way it was today. He needed to find his own way to sustain himself. So he had been begging his whole life, just having a meagre existence because he was blind and unable to do the normal work that people in those days would do. And as his disciples saw this, they asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" So make this huge assumption. Here's a guy who seems to not be in the favour of God, because if God liked him, surely he would have made his life better. Surely he would have given him the blessings that you and I enjoy of sight and being able to work and earn a crust. Instead, he's been afflicted. So clearly, either he did something wrong or his parents did something wrong, that God would make his life like that. Have you ever felt a little bit like that yourself? What have I done wrong, or what has somebody else done wrong that God would afflict me like this? There's stuff going on in your life which you don't necessarily understand. And then, God, what am I doing that you've made this stuff happen in my life? Why do I deserve this? Now, let's be clear, if we were all to get what we deserve from God, we'd be far worse off than we are now. He would withdraw all of his mercies which he gives us every day of our lives. But sometimes we feel that way, don't we? Or is it just a couple of people? Sometimes we feel, what have I done to deserve it? Why don't I have the things that other people have? Why don't I have the possessions? Why don't I have the skills? Why don't I have the abilities? You look at somebody else, maybe you're a bit like Moses, and, well, I can't speak as well as other people. How can you say you want to use me to do your work? I mean, I'm not that good. And we look at ourselves according to our afflictions, our limitations, and sometimes we go, it's not fair. And so Jesus' disciples are thinking along these sorts of lines when it comes to this guy, and they're thinking, surely he deserves it somehow that God would treat him this way. And Jesus goes on to say, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him." Now, I don't know how old he was, but however long his life had been going on, people have been, I guess, disrespecting him, casting him aside, saying, here's somebody God does not like. Here's somebody who has done something to offend God, and he's been looked at that way his whole life. And Jesus comes in and says, you know what, guys? You've completely misread this situation. Here is a person whose life has been planned by God in order to glorify him. Is this the exception to the rule? No. In fact, God has designed all of us to have lives which glorify him. Who knows the Westminster Confession off by heart? Well, one of the things that it says is that the chief end of man, that the reason that we were created, the purpose that we have, is to glorify God. And in so doing, to enjoy him forever. We were created for God's glory. And Jesus says, you've misunderstood this situation. This man is blind, not because he's done something to offend God, but rather God has designed this man's life to be to his glory. And you are going to see something happen in his life which is going to blow your minds. And what happens? Jesus heals him. He heals him on a Sabbath. Pharisees get upset and they investigate the healing. They talk to the bloke's parents. They talk to him. They're trying to find ways to accuse Jesus. And some of the Pharisees are thinking, well, no, this is actually a good thing, what Jesus has done. But the most influential, the most powerful are saying, no, he has broken God's laws. Read that, he's broken our rules. He has broken God's laws, and so therefore he cannot be from God. He cannot have God's approval. And as they investigate this, as we get toward the end of the chapter, we pick it up from verse 26. As this group asked the man who had been healed, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" And the blind man answers, "I've told you already and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" Now, for this particular group of people, there is nothing more inflammatory that you could have said to them. And they respond accordingly. They hurled insults at him and said, "You are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. The man who had been blind answered, Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. To this they replied, You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us? And they threw him out. So we've got two groups of people, or one person and a group of people. And one person who was despised by many, who would seem to be the person that God just thinks is rubbish. The one who has a life of almost pointlessness. He's just stuck on the side of a road begging to get his daily bread. He has no apparent meaning and no apparent purpose. He's despised of God and of man, according to the way people saw him. People didn't see him as God saw him. And then you have this other group, and they are the shepherds of Israel. They are the leaders. They are the ones who know God, who know God's ways, who lead others in God's ways. One is blind and can see nothing. The others know everything that needs to be known. And yet, we have one who receives something from God and another group who reject it. Continue our story in verse 35. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and when he found him, he said, Do you believe in the Son of Man? Now remember what that phrase, the Son of Man, means. It goes back to Daniel 7. This person who looks like just an ordinary person, yet he is a person who God has given authority to rule over all creation, authority over an eternal kingdom. And Jesus says, Do you believe in this person, this Son of Man that was promised? The blind man says, Who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him. And Jesus says, You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. Then the man said, and this is one of my favourite phrases in the whole Bible, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. This is a great example of what true faith is. Lord, I believe. You've revealed yourself. I believe. And his response was to worship him. You know, there are plenty of people who say they believe in Jesus, but then disrespect him and disregard him in the way that they live. What this man did is a fantastic example. I believe, I see you for who you are. You are the Son of Man that the scripture, that the prophets foretold would come. I believe. And so what is the only response possible? To worship. You see, if you're not worshipping Jesus, if you don't want to glorify him, then you don't really know him as the Lord of all creation, the Lord of your life, the Lord of all eternity. You haven't really grasped it. But this man did. He grasped it, and so he worshipped Jesus. He turned from doing his own thing. He turned from living for himself to being a person who worshipped God with his life. Tremendous stuff. And Jesus said, For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind. You see, regardless of whether or not Jesus had healed the man's sight, he was a blind person who now could see. Why? Because he'd had the truth revealed and he believed it. He knew the truth about Jesus. The Pharisees and the leaders, on the other hand, well, they could see physically all right. And in the opinion of many people, they knew all about God. They knew what was going on. They were the teachers. But yet, in actual fact, what does Jesus say? They're blind. And I've come to make it really obvious. Some people looked at him and thought that. They looked at them and thought that. Jesus said, switch it. This one actually sees. Regardless of how his eyes are working, he sees. He has received me. He's believed in me. These guys, who seem to have all of the respect, all of the positions of authority, all of the credentials, they don't see because they don't believe me. Critically important. And that's the background as we head into chapter 10, the story of the Good Shepherd. As some Pharisees heard this in verse 40, some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, What, are we blind too? Jesus said, If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains. These people said, What, are you saying that we, the shepherds of Israel, are spiritually blind? And Jesus was saying, Well, since you claim to know, then you're guilty of rejecting me. Because I am who I say I am. There's one thing before we move on to Jesus' story of the Good Shepherd, which really is speaking strongly to this group of Pharisees. But before we leave this man behind, I want to just point out to you how significant his life was. Now, people wrote him off. He's a beggar on the side of the road, blind, can't do anything of real use in that society. And so they've disregarded him, and he himself probably felt that way. He probably had a very low opinion of himself and a low idea of how God perceived him. He probably wondered if God had written him off the way everyone else did. But you know what? He's had a profound significance in the lives of millions. I was at a funeral on Friday for Graham Johnson, wonderful guy. A guy almost at the opposite end of the spectrum to this man, of great intelligence, great resources, great leadership, great success in ministry, and has impacted thousands. I wasn't really close to Graham. He taught my preaching class, and he used to make us preach without notes. So I don't have any notes today. It's sort of a tribute to him, but he taught us how to preach and made a great impact on my life. A few years ago, I was privileged to go to New Guinea with him, and just to see how he related to other leaders in the church and built into them. And it was great to hear the tributes, just inspiring. And as I went away from that funeral, there were things that God spoke to me about that I could learn from this leader in the church of God. Very inspiring. Almost at the other end of the spectrum to what the blind man was. But yet both lives, regardless of their differences in human thinking and in human perception, were enormously significant in the kingdom. Here's a guy of little natural ability, possibly, of little natural resources, opportunities, and who, in his lifetime, as we read of it, didn't really do that much, but he's affected millions. Why? Because he received the work of God in its right time. Don't ever write yourself off. You might look at yourself and compare yourself to others and say, oh, if only I could speak like so-and-so. If only I had the financial resources of so-and-so, I'd love to give so much. Oh, if only I had the ability, the time, whatever it might be that somebody else has. Don't do that. God uses every life which is available to him for his glory. And he can work in your life to glorify himself and to be a blessing to others beyond your wildest dreams. Do you believe that? Put yourself in this man's situation. We're reading of him 2,000 years later and he's blessing our lives. Would he have expected that? Never. I imagine myself as a guy walking past him on the street feeling sorry for him, you know? But yet, in 2,000 years' time, I would be forgotten and this man would still be impacting people for the glory of God. God turns things around like that, the way that we don't expect. Never write God off in your life or anyone else's. He will always glorify his name through people who will receive him, through people who will accept his work. And I pray that we're people like that. Let's get into the story of the Good Shepherd. Having this group of people who just reject him time and time again, no matter what he does, they're saying, nut, you're not the Son of Man. Nut, you're not the Messiah. He says to these guys, very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. Now, to get yourself into the mindset of what's going on here, they used to have these sheep pens. Now, the shepherds used to lead their flocks of sheep. They would lead by walking out in front, and their sheep would follow them. We'd talk more about that in a minute. But at night time, or when the weather wasn't so good, the sheep would be put in these sheep pens, often several flocks at once, belonging to different shepherds. They would all be put in this sheep pen, and it might be sort of like a natural canyon with a wall built across one side to hem the sheep in. And the wall would only be about waist height or so, and there'd be thorn bushes placed along the top of it to prevent any animals hopping over the fence, and there would be a gap left in the wall so that the sheep could go out and come in. And so at night time, one of the shepherds possibly would lay down at the gate to make sure that nothing went in or out. It might be somebody else who had that job as a watchman, or else they might drag some thorn bushes or something similar to block off the entrance so that the sheep were safe in their sheep pen. That's how it worked, and that's what Jesus is talking about here. The one who enters by the gate, in verse 2, is the shepherd of the sheep. So the one who comes into the sheep pen via the gate, the watchman's there, he gives him approval, that's the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Well, what he was telling them was really straightforward. They'd seen it dozens of times. That's the way it worked. Sheep all together in a pen. The shepherd comes along, he calls out his particular sheep, off he goes. Next shepherd comes, he gets his particular sheep out. They shared that pen. And in this particular part of the story, Jesus is picturing Israel as like this sheep pen. And he's come to the nation of Israel and he is calling his sheep. And those who know him respond to his voice, like this blind man, and they believe in him and they follow him. Those who don't belong to him won't listen to his voice, they'll stay there. And these Pharisees, they're like the ones who don't know his voice. They're staying in that sheep pen, they're not responding. But there's another picture also that Jesus uses of these Pharisees. Not only are they like these sheep who aren't responding to his voice, but they're actually like thieves or robbers who are coming in to take away the sheep of Israel, to lead them in directions they're not supposed to go, to use them for their own selfish purposes. In the book of Ezekiel, we see God speaking to the nation and talking about these false shepherds, these people who are only in it for themselves, for their own profit, for their own comfort, for their own prestige. And so they don't love the sheep and they don't serve the sheep. They're using the sheep for their own advancement, for their own needs. They're in it for the pay. And Jesus is likening the Pharisees to ones like that. Not the true shepherds, but these who come in and try to lead sheep astray for their own ends. He's having a real go at these Pharisees here. But it's almost lost on them. They don't understand what he's talking about. So Jesus says again, and he changes the picture a little bit here, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." Jesus has portrayed himself, first of all, as the good shepherd, the one who leads his sheep, much like David wrote about in Psalm 23. This, "The Lord is my shepherd." That's what Jesus is like. He leads me in paths of righteousness. He leads us in ways that sustain us and bless us and nourish us and keep us safe. But now he changes that picture a little bit and he says, "Oh, I'm like the gate. And if you want to be a part of my pen now, not this collective pen where there are several different flocks all mixed in together, but if you want to be a part of my pen, then the only way in and out is through me. I'm the one who leads you out. I'm the one who brings you in. You can't get in any other way. As the Bible says, there is no other name under heaven by which we can be saved. It is only through Jesus." And there are these thieves, these people who are in it for themselves, and they're going to try and get the sheep out. They're going to try to lure the sheep away. They're going to make all sorts of offers and say, "Well, this is how to please God, obey these rules." Or, "This is what you really want in life, come and pursue this." They're going to use all sorts of techniques in order to attract the sheep, but they are thieves and robbers. And Jesus' sheep, those who know him, won't listen to these false shepherds. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Now, as I thought about that and I thought about the way that Jesus leads us to live, it's so good. It's so good the ways that Jesus leads us in. And if you follow Jesus, you've experienced that. You've experienced that no matter what else is going on in life, where Jesus leads you is good. And you can trust in him. But so often we get tempted away from that path, don't we? We have the marketing that goes on all around us, the ads on TV which say, "This is what a good life looks like. This is what pleasure looks like. This is what it feels like. These are the things you need to pursue." And it's always enticing us towards something else. Satan knows what our hidden desires are, and he knows the way that people think and work. And he tries to lure us away and get us to listen to other voices. We're surrounded by that. But Jesus' sheep know his voice. Now, I was thinking about the way that our society profits, if you like, from getting people to swallow these lines. And you think about the money that is made as people sell products and sell stuff, and people in their desperation buy more and chase more and do more, trying to find happiness, trying to find contentment, and there's always someone profiting from that. There's always someone selling something for their own selfish purposes. But you know what? In the end, we're all being ripped off, because it's the father of lies who is the real author of all of these things which go against Jesus in his ways. And his purpose is to steal, kill and destroy. And even for those people who look like they're making it, "I've got five boats, I've got 12 cars. I've got a big jet. Now, whatever it is that they have. Well, I've got this many girlfriends, and I've done all these sorts of things and had these experiences, and I've surfed the biggest waves that have ever been seen, and I'm the best No, I would never go as far as that. If only I was the best basketballer in the whole world. You know, whatever it might be, it's still a rip-off. In eternity's perspective, it's still nothing compared to what Jesus had intended to give you. And if you've swallowed Satan's lie and pursued those things with your whole heart, then you're going to be ripped off at the end of the day because you'll be without Christ. And that's all that matters. Jesus said there's an enemy who wants to steal, kill and destroy, but his sheep know his voice. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus knew ahead of time what was going to be required in order for us to be kept safe, in order for us to be saved. Verse 12, the hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. Jesus is contrasting himself to these people who serve for their own selfish motivations. And you know what? In the Church of God, I've seen that plenty of time, where people have aspired to positions of leadership in whatever form, and it's been for their own selfish motivations. And Jesus, as he looked at these Pharisees, that's what he saw them as well. They were in it for their own selfish ends. But Jesus says in verse 14, I am the good shepherd, I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen, I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. Now, just on that, some people have read that and got a bit of a wrong idea to think, well, Jesus is talking to people who are his followers, and then he says, now there are other sheep of other sheep flocks and I need to go and bring them in as well. Who's he talking about? Is he appearing to some people as Buddha? Is he appearing to some people as Muhammad? Is he appearing to some people as some sort of ascended spiritual master? Is he bringing people through all these different means to make one eternal family? No, that's not what he's talking about at all. It's really quite obvious. He's talking to the people of Israel here. And he's saying, it's not just people of this ethnic group I'm interested in. It's not just you Israelites. I'm interested in the whole world. And that's what John shared with us earlier, that we are so grateful for today. And in Revelation 5 we read, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals. This is Jesus as he's taking possession of the earth. Because you were slain and with your blood you purchased people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation. And as he was returning to heaven, what did he say to his disciples? Go now and make disciples of all nations. That's what he's talking about. I have sheep who are living in Africa. I have sheep who are living in Australia. I have sheep who are living in the Americas. I have sheep everywhere, and I want to go there and bring them all into my sheep pen. And the way that he's chosen to do that is through his followers, as we go and make disciples. That's what Jesus is talking about here. Verse 17. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again, the command I received from my Father. Now Jesus is describing there the fact that it was going to require of him as this good shepherd to die for his sheep. Now, they would have been familiar that there was a risk in shepherding. There could be a lion, there could be a wolf, there could be a bear. Something could come along, but you know, there's no guarantee. You might get lucky and never have to face anything like that. You might have a lion come along and, like David, defeat it. A bear and, like David, defeat it. But Jesus knew that in order to save his sheep, he would have to give his life. Why? Well, Isaiah tells us, we all like sheep have gone astray, and each of us has gone after our own way. Now, have you ever tried to control a mob of sheep? Brooke probably has. It's fun, isn't it? Now, in those days, as we were talking about, the sheep knew the shepherd's voice, and because they were raised by the shepherd, each shepherd often had their flute and they'd play particular tunes, and so when the sheep heard that, they'd know to follow. The sheep had names given to them by the shepherd, and he would call them individually. Now, there was a close relationship because they knew one another because the sheep had been with him since infancy and he lived with them. Whereas the way we do that in Australia is quite different. You put a mob in a paddock and you leave them there till you need to do something to them or with them. And I was helping a guy bring in, I think they were about one-year-old lambs. So they weren't fully grown, and we were bringing them up for shearing. And as we were moving them along a fence line, there were still some really runty ones amongst them who were scrambling under the fence. Others of them could fit through the mesh. And it was a pain in the neck because they wanted to go anywhere else but where we were driving them. And we went sort of out front leading, and we were behind on motorbikes chasing them along. And it was interesting, when they got under the fence, do you think we could get them back through the fence? Every time they tried to get back in, they'd get tangled up and they'd panic and go all crazy. And so it was a real nuisance. But we're all like that. We're like Aussie sheep. As Isaiah says, we've each turned to our own way. We see what's on the other side of the law, in a sense. We see God's made rules, this is where I want you to go. And we go, that looks good. And Satan goes, this really is good. And so we go after those things outside of what God had planned for us, outside the boundaries, and we get stuck. And Jesus came as the one who was going to pay the price to redeem all of us, to bring us back into God's fold. He was the one who did that, and it cost him his life. Isaiah tells us the price that brought us peace was upon him. Somebody had to pay the penalty for all that we did against God's ways, against his justice. That price had to be paid, and Jesus chose to pay it for us. Why? Because he loves us. He's the good shepherd, and he gave his life for us. Now, there's an important picture here, and John spoke a little bit about it when he talked about the old covenant and the new covenant. Sometimes we picture ourselves as Christians as being like Aussie sheep, and God has laid out ways to live, and it's like a fence around us. Don't steal, don't lie, don't do all this, do these other things. And so that's our paddock. And as long as we stay in there, we're okay. And so sometimes we wander up to the fence line and we see stuff on the other side and we go, oh, I'd like that. And so we push against the fence and we stretch those rules as far as we can in order to get what we want. And sometimes we hop over the fence and we do things that we really ought not to do, and we think, oh, I'll just hop back in, but I'll just do this and God will forgive me and then I'll come back in. And we treat that as how the Christian is supposed to live. That's nothing like how a Christian is supposed to live. Jesus is saying, look, it's more old school than that. Go back to how it even happens today, actually, in the Middle East. If you're in the Middle East, you'll see some shepherds. They come together at a well. They're having a good chat. Then one will go off and he says, all right, let's go. And his sheep will just extricate themselves from the mob. You know, you see ones and twos coming from all over and they'll follow him. Why? They're not hemmed in to a paddock. They've learned to follow a person. And Jesus is saying, I'm the good shepherd. I'm that person you follow. I'm not the guy patrolling the boundaries saying, oi, get back in that fence line. I'm the guy who's leading you in the way you ought to go. And we've been given a new way of living, which is not to seek our own desires, whether they're inside the fence or outside the fence. Our new way of living is to listen to the shepherd and to follow him and to trust him that he's actually going to do what is best for us. It's how we must see our Christian life. The Pharisees were people who built big fences. They erected these rules all around people and say, this is what you're allowed to do and this is what you're not allowed to do. Jesus comes in and says, guys, you've lost the point. Not only have you lost the real purpose behind those laws and added your own, but you've not realised that God wants to be the shepherd of people's souls. It was spoken about in the Old Testament time and time again. That was always what he was about. But these Pharisees had lost sight of that. Don't let us lose sight of that. There is a shepherd who gave his life for you and for me. And there is a shepherd who wants to lead us in the ways that are good. There is a shepherd who wants to give us an eternity which is better than we can even start to imagine. And it only comes about by believing in him and following him. Don't be like a sheep in a paddock that's just seeking its own way. The results of that type of living are disastrous. You leave yourself vulnerable to that thief who comes to steal, kill and destroy, that one who wants to entice you away from the voice of Jesus. Don't let that happen in your life. I've seen that happen too many times, and I've seen it happen in my own life, and I know how much it hurts when you allow that to happen. Follow Jesus. That's the only way to live. He's the good shepherd. I'm going to play a short media clip for you now, and it reveals to us just some of the ways that Jesus has revealed himself to us, some of the ways that we can know him. And I want you to just think about that and ask yourself, do I really know this person? Is this the person that I've gotten to know and I'm following, or is Jesus just an idea for me? Is Christianity just a bunch of rules? And I want to encourage you, get to know the man who is God, who is the good shepherd. Thanks, Ash.